Good morning, gents. Welcome to the Get Out Podcast. I'm Billy. I'm here today with Spencer and James and special guest Luke Walter of the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission. How are we doing this morning, gents?
Good. Thank you guys for having me.
Fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. Luke, we definitely appreciate you joining us today, and we'd like to give a special thanks and shout out to your higher chain of command for letting you join us this morning on this podcast here.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I always love listening to the podcast. You know, I drive around for work all day, so once I got asked to be part of one, I was like, oh man, you can't beat it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that was, you know, when we met out there at Harbor Acres, I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
We haven't interviewed a game warden or a waterways conservation officer out of any particular state yet. And I feel like, you know, hey, that'd be a great first to have right there. And, you know, I asked, and luckily enough, you were able to do it. So awesome.
Yep.
So we're going to interrogate you this morning. No, not really. We'll ask you a few questions. But so obviously, for those of you who don't know, in the state of Pennsylvania, unlike, we'll just go with Texas, being that James, Spencer, and I are all from Texas. Pennsylvania has their game wardens and their fish and boat commission completely separate. So unlike the state of Texas, where a Texas game warden covers every aspect, the state of Pennsylvania has two separate entities, literally one for the hunting side and a officer for the fishing side. And that is what Luke does. He is on the fishing side of the, I guess you would say, most people know, typical game warden aspect, as everyone drops them into one category, but Luke does the fishing side. So today, yep, we're going to kind of get into what a waterways conservation officer does compared to a game warden or game commissioner here in the state of Pennsylvania, kind of the differences and kind of what little bit overlaps between the two and whatnot. So Luke, if you wouldn't mind just kind of explaining a little bit about what your role is, what the Fish and Boat Commission is versus kind of what the game wardens here in PA do.
Yeah, so it's pretty similar to a point. So we're basically considered brother-sister organizations. So like you mentioned, a lot of other states are all together. You know, it's, you know, their fish and game or their wildlife conservation or however other states have it. Here in Pennsylvania, we're the Fish and Boat Commission and then the Pennsylvania Game Commission. So we do work a lot with one another. So like, for example, you know, for fish and boat, we have Title 30 regulations and Title 58. And then the Game Commission has a Title 34 with also a Title 58. So we reciprocate, we can enforce each other's laws and so on and so forth. 9 times out of 10, you know, if we're over somewhere like Harbor Acres and one of the game wardens will come through, obviously, because it's a state game land, if there's some kind of violation, they'll get all the information that you know, we would need, and then they pass it along to us and vice versa. You know, if I see a game violation, I'll get all that information. I'll give it to them. Cause then, you know, everyone needs a bean now and again. So we try to help each other out whenever we can. Then it's, another thing too, it's, you hear it a little bit, for us, and we try to tell people, and it's funny because we actually have a new secretary in our region office. So, and the little pre-recording, you know, because like you mentioned, people will lump us all together. So if it's has fur and feathers, it's the Game Commission. If it's cold and slimy, it's the Fish and Boat Commission.
I like that.
Yeah, being up here for a couple of years, I haven't heard that.
Yep.
Yeah. So Luke, how'd you kind of fall into that career? Or was it something you really wanted to do as, you know, growing up?
Yeah, so that's actually, it's a funny story. So never in my life did I think I would be kind of where I am now. I actually went to Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania. I have my bachelor's and master's in sport and exercise science. I worked as an exercise physiologist for a couple years. When I graduated, when I graduated with my master's, it was when COVID came through. And so, and it's funny, you guys are from Texas. I actually had a job lined up in cardiac rehab in Fort Worth, Texas, in a hospital. But obviously, as you guys know, the hospitals during that period of time were crazy. They terminated the position. So then I moved back home, worked in the field, and I was like, you know, I love it. Don't get me wrong. It is what it is. And it's funny because an old school teacher used to teach my sisters. He was retired before I got in. He used to come to my old place of work. He's a big stocking helper, always goes to all the trout stockings. And he was like, hey, Luke, you know, I know you're trying to look for something different. They're applying, you know, they're accepting applications. So I was like, you know what? You know, I'll go for it. I'll give it a shot because, you know, it's straight up said on the application, you know, if you have military, like a military background, you get kind of like extra points kind of deal because, you know, it's with the civil service and whatnot. So I was like, well, I'll try it. And lo and behold, I got it. So, here I am. I mean, it was a long road because our training is fairly long. It's a whole year.
Oh, wow.
It's funny because I tell people I fell into the job where they're like, well, how'd you do that? Well, it's like, well, I didn't fall in because it was a process, but, it was quite the road. When I tell people my background, they're like, what the heck are you doing this? But obviously, just like you guys, I'm a big outdoorsman. You know, I love to be outside. I'm a big hunter, trapper, fisherman. So anytime I get to be outside, it's just a great day.
Oh, 100%.
So I got to ask Luke, because when I was looking at potentially becoming a game warden here in Texas, it's crazy because it's the only department in the state of Texas that requires a 4-year degree in order to even become a game warden. Wow. Is it the same in Pennsylvania with the Fish Commission, or do you actually have to have a degree to get in?
It is not. You actually do not have to have a degree as long as you're, you know, you have to be 21 years old, but there's no schooling background that you need. And it's actually the only law enforcement that I really knew of that needed background was the state police, Pennsylvania State Police. You needed about like 60 some credits, I believe is what it was. Basically, it equivalent to an associate's degree. But just this past year, they actually took it away.
Yep.
And so they saw that their numbers skyrocketed. And I was reading some article, it went up, you know, like 400% in applicants because they took that requirement away.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah.
And it was funny because it wasn't specific. Like, you didn't have to have a 4-year degree in wildlife and fishery science. You can literally have a 4-year degree in liberal arts, but you had have a 4-year degree. And I was just like, really? You can be a state trooper without a degree, but be a game warden, you actually had to have a 4-year degree.
Yeah, that's very strange. Very strange. I don't really know much about that. You know, I've only been to Texas a couple times, but, you know, of course, you know, I'm a little sucker like everybody else. You know, you watch those TV shows like the Lone Star Ranger, whatever it was, the game wards down there. So you always see the craziness side of it. But
yep. Not to mention they got a TV show, so they got to look cool.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
They all wear their cowboy hats.
Yeah, stereotypical. You know, you'll get the green hat sometimes, the ball cap, but it's typically the cowboy hat.
Yeah. The only reason why I wanted to be a Texas State game warden so I could still wear my Stetson.
There you go.
get one issued to you.
Yeah, right. A state issued Stetson. Yeah, I like that. So what does a typical day look like for you? Or is there such thing as a typical day?
Yeah. So that's exactly it. There's no such thing really as a typical day. You know, kind of at the start of the day, you know, what we say for us is, you know, your biggest decision is, you know, whether you're going to turn left or right out of your driveway. You know what I mean? Cause, we do have a state vehicle, which we get to take home, which is awesome. You know, it has its pros, its cons, cause obviously, you know, so say for example, my shift today was 07 to 15. So if I was, you know, for a normal job, if I started at 7 a.m., I would have to be at my place of employment, obviously, as you guys know, at 7. So I'd have to leave my house at 6:30, so on and so forth. For having the vehicle in the driveway, you know, you're walking at the door at 7 a.m. to your truck. So it all kind of depends on what needs done. So we get pollution calls. I have a big state park in my county for Butler County, which is Moraine State Park. And so in the summertime, I spend a lot of my time there is where my patrol boat stays. one of the marinas there. And so that's typically where I spend most of my time in the summer.
So you're talking about Moraine State Park, I'm assuming.
Yep. Yep. You got it.
Yep. You'll probably see me out there a lot this summer in my kayak.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I promise I have my launch permits.
That's good. That's good. I'm going to try to get the boat in the water later today if I can. So.
If you need help, let me know. I only live 20 minutes away.
Oh, that'd be perfect. Yeah.
I think if he needs help at this point, he might have some other problems.
Hey, how often is it that you get to go ride on or at least go see a boat from a state agency that, you know, handles fishing and hunting?
That's fair.
Yeah.
I was down fishing the Texas coast and got to see one of the Coast Guard patrol boats. And, you know, it's like one of these 36-foot yellowfin offshore boats with like 5 outboards on the back. Pretty sure it was confiscated, but those things are just monsters. So I'm guessing y'all don't have quite that nice of a boat being up there. So what are y'all riding around in? Is it just a standard, you know, you're putting around a pontoon boat, a little John boat, or you got something a little nicer than that?
Yeah, so it all kind of depends on where you're at in the state. So, for example, my boat, it's not bad. I mean, it gets the job done. It's not anything crazy. It's an old Roughneck, but actually, we just got some new funding where I'll be getting a new G3. Still has to get our decals and lights and everything put on it. But anytime you get something new, you know, it always is super nice. So that's what's going to be coming for Moraine. But if you go at the places like, you know, Allegheny County with where they have the Three Rivers, or you get out east to Delaware, or you get up to the Erie, we do have some silver ships and whatnot. And those are some pretty massive boats. We do work pretty hand in hand with the Coast Guard up there in Erie. So our boats are pretty comparable to theirs.
Very nice. All I'm saying is just give me a 20-minute head start in a kayak before you chase me down on Moraine, okay? I can't paddle that fast.
Yeah, probably not. Not with this new one either.
I bet you anything, though, Billy, you would be the next TikTok sensation, though. He'd be like, hey, guys, look at this guy trying to outrun me in a kayak.
That would be a sight to see.
You're going to be out there with a little cordless drill with a propeller on
the
end.
I'm going to have my cordless drill with a paddle hanging off the back. You can't catch me, Luke.
Oh, that'd be a sight to see.
So, kind of backtrack here just a second. So obviously, you know, you said there's a year-long training required for the Fish and Boat Commission and the Academy.
Yep.
Can you kind of describe, you know, the training just kind of, in a nutshell, from kind of start to finish, kind of how that rolls out?
Yeah. So I will be forward. So it is changing a little bit now from when I went through. So, you know, you have your application and whatnot. And if you get accepted from the application, then you go right into a physical fitness test. So you have your, you know, as you guys are in the military, you're aware, you know, you have your push-ups, sit-ups, your mile and a half, but then also being fish and boat, we do have a swim portion as well, which isn't too difficult. It's, I don't know, 200 meters or something like that in a time frame, and then tread water for a certain amount of time. As long as you pass that, then you move on to, you know, your psych process, your at-home interview, your health screening, that sort of thing. So once that whole debacle is all done, then you move on to the actual academy. So what I went through is we went through the MPOTEC, which is the Municipal Police Officer Education Training curriculum. And then after we do that, which is 6 months, then we go, our school is in Bellefonte, which is in Center County, HR Stackhouse of Watercraft Safety and Fisheries. And then we do another 6 months there. That 6 months also includes our field training work as well. So we'll go out for a certain period of time during like trout season. Then we'll go out for a certain period of time during boating season for our field work before we graduate. But now they're doing, I don't want to say doing away with the Apotec, they're kind of changing it a little bit. They're still going to incorporate most of that curriculum. So they just opened up a new position last year, which is a training captain that one of our officers got promoted to it. So this will be, we actually have a class going through, I believe, and starting in August. And this will be the first class of this new process. So it'll really be a learning experience. Just like anything else with the first year, you know, there's going to be some hiccups. There are going to be some good. There's going to be some bad. But overall, as long as we get these, you know, these officers or these cadets coming out as good officers, and, you know, it'll all be good in the end.
Awesome. There you go. So how long have you been a waterways conservation officer?
So actually not that long. I was part of the last class that went through. So I've been on, so obviously our training is a year, and then I've been out in the field for a year. So technically I've been employed for a little over 2 years.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. So do you think, you know, whenever the field portion hits with this next class, do you think they're going to assign you a cadet for that week or so time frame that they normally kind of shuffle the cadets around to different areas of the state?
I tell you, I definitely have volunteered. I love to teach. I was actually, before I left Gannon, I was an instructor at Gannon. I taught exercise physiology lab. And then I wrestled, you know, my entire life. I wrestled while I was up there at school. And so I'm a wrestling coach. So obviously, you know, that goes along with teaching. So I love to be able to help people. And I feel like I have a good grasp on getting people to learn the appropriate steps. Obviously, as you guys know, being in the military, you know, you had good instructors that you had, and then you had other ones that maybe weren't so hot. And so
10%ers.
Yeah. So I want to be one of those good, because this job is great. It's a lot of fun. You know, it does come with a lot of responsibility and a lot of work. There are ways to balance it the appropriate way. So hopefully I can, like I said, I have volunteered. So hopefully they'll take me up on that offer.
Awesome. There you go. Now, Luke, you brought up a really good point with the education, especially with the future cadets, but how have you had the opportunity to educate actually like the people you're serving? You know, I know you probably run into a lot of instances where knowledge is not fully there, or you have to kind of spin them up to speed. Have you ever ran into that situation a lot out there in the water?
Yeah. So it all kind of depends on the situation, on where the education really starts versus, you know, the disciplinary action kind of thing. So anytime I have kids that are around, I actually keep a huge stack of, we have these pamphlets that are fish identification guides that has all the fish and pictures and their names and their scientific names. I keep it in the door of my truck. So anytime I see a kid, you know, I hand it out to them. I show them, you know, next time you go fishing with mom or dad and you catch a fish, you don't know what it is, you can look it up. And then, you know, I'll take it and I'll be like, you know, have you caught any? I'll pull to like the panfish section, or I'll be like, you know, you catch any of these fish today? And they'll start pointing things out, and it's cool. And then you have some adults where obviously, you know, as you guys know, where you can watch a fisherman and you kind of know when somebody knows what they're doing, and then you can plainly see when somebody doesn't know what they're doing. So obviously like with any law enforcement, you know, I always try to watch the situation before I engage. And so if I see somebody really struggling, maybe they might have a big bird's nest or they're having a hard time casting or so on and so forth, then I go over, and we're actually throughout the academy, we go through and we have to become like a certified fishing instructor. We learn all that stuff, even though, you know, being an angler, you already kind of know how to do it. So it's nice just to be able to teach people and how to run different rigs and whatnot to try to help them have the most success. Because like with anything else, you know, if you don't go out, you don't really have any success, you almost get discouraged. You know what I mean? So if I could get somebody to catch a little bluegill or a little something, you know, it brightens their day up. Especially the kids, even if they don't catch anything, but they might get that little pamphlet, it makes their whole day.
Especially being a kid, because it's just, they're soaking up so much knowledge, and it's just constant. Anything new to them is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Plus, who doesn't like free stuff?
Exactly.
Especially from the government.
Yeah. All right, so obviously the boys here know that Luke and I met on a trout stocking day, and I was out fishing in my kayak and stuff. I know whenever we were kind of getting scheduling, Luke, for you to join us today, trout stocking was going on, you know, from here to here. So with trout stocking, if you kind of get a little bit into that, then I'll follow up with another question that I seen while I was out there while y'all were stocking trout. So if you wouldn't mind kind of diving into kind of what the process of stocking the trout, you know, kind of A to B and all the way to Z kind of runs there.
Yeah. So stocking trout here in Pennsylvania, it's a huge ordeal. Obviously, you saw at Harbor Acres how many people were there simply for that one truck of fish that got put in. Around the first of the year, we get a schedule that gets put out with all of our stocked trout waters, and that gets published. That's in our fishing summary guide. And if you hop on to fishingboat.com and you can type in specifically Butler County, it'll show you all of my stocked trout waters. It'll show you the top end limit that we stock all the way to the bottom end limit that we stock and so on and so forth. So typically we do preseason stocking first, in season. For example, Harbor Acres, and if you're familiar with Glade Run Lake down near Saxonburg, also in Butler County, it gets a fall or a winter stocking. So one happens in October, one happens in November. So for a regular creek stocking, that schedule gets put out online, and you have your devoted stocking helpers, and they'll come. And the typical method, what we do is they'll be, so say there's, you know, a section of creek, there's 8 stops, you know, you get a certain number of fish on that truck. What you do is you'll break down how many fish and how many buckets per stop. One bucket is about 25 fish. That's the most typical release of those fish, is just bucketing them, taking them right to the water. We do, if it's a lake, as you saw at Harbor Acres, if we're somewhere where we can get right up close to it, we can hook those tubes up and we can tube them right into the lake or right into a section of water. I don't have a whole lot of it in Butler County. It's slowly growing with a small section that thankfully an individual has built his own floats. It's called float stocking. So it's basically, think of a great dog box. Okay. It's basically a big box with chicken wire around it. You put the fish in and then they float it and they walk it down the creek and they'll take out, you know, 2-3 here, 2-3 there, so on and so forth, all the way down. So that's better for the fish because it helps them get acclimated to the water for a longer period of time before they're released. And then they get way more evenly distributed as well. So people sometimes forget that fish do swim. So even though I put, you know, 6 buckets right here, they're going to eventually make their way up and down the stream. But with float stocking, it kind of already helps them be separated. So James, I see that you're laughing there, but people over here in Pennsylvania, they get pretty crazy with it. So I'll never forget, I was doing a stocking, and sometimes during an in-season stocking, we might not hit all of the locations because we might not have the same number of fish as we did preseason. And I had these 2 stops, couldn't have been, I don't know, 200, maybe 300 yards apart. And I had these gentlemen come up to me and say, like, well, why aren't we putting any fish here? And I'm like, well, fish will swim. And they took that like I was the devil. It was amazing. I never really had that reaction before. It is a big ordeal.
Yeah.
Because it is.
It's crazy how sometimes the blatantly obvious is not there.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, he's definitely not joking, though. I mean, they look at him, you know, as far as stalking, like he's the devil. These guys up here and ladies, if those trout are not in that hole, or they're not putting what they put last season in, they will lose their mind. They are 100% about their trout all day long, all night long. That's eat, breathe, and sleep their trout. If they don't get them, they're mad. Y'all know that I worked for the Game Commission for the first year that I lived up here. So just seeing, you know, kind of because I worked food and cover crew for the Game Commission, and, you know, like Luke, you know, obviously I didn't stock trout, but I did stock pheasant. And if we weren't there when the stocking schedule said we were there, all hell would break loose. You know, hey, where are the pheasants? Where's the stocking truck? You're not here yet. And I'm like, we can only go as fast as the speed limit allows us. And it depends on how many trucks are in front of us, because, you know, when we would stock pheasants, Lawrence County Game Commission headquarters, we're not getting one single day to ourselves. You know, it's Lawrence County, Butler County, and all the other surrounding counties. it depends on who gets there first and who gets there last, you know, and how many pheasants are allocated per set of game lands. Obviously, like the trout, you know, they got to go there just to the trout farm like we had to go to the pheasant farm. If you're not first or second in line, you're probably going to be behind 30 minutes or so, 45 minutes, depending, you know, what game lands or area you're going to. So I definitely feel your pain on being called the devil there for not having certain things stocked at the right time.
Exactly.
When y'all were tubing in the trout, obviously I was the lone ranger out in my kayak. But everyone, as y'all were pumping the trout in, were throwing their lines basically right on top of the tube. I mean, is that something that y'all try to avoid, or is that some kind of maybe a rule that's going to be put into play in the future to kind of let y'all actually get the fish stocked and equipment pulled before people start launching lines over the top of everything?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And that does make things a little frustrating. I wish that there was a law or regulation or something in those lines to prevent that from happening. Sadly, there isn't. I try to tell people to give us a little bit of space, let us put the fish in, and then as soon as we get done, then, you know, go right ahead. But obviously, as you saw, there were so many people there, nobody listened, and that wasn't even the worst. So I was actually, earlier this season, I was covering a stocking in Venango County, and we were putting a fish in right next to a dock. And there, no kidding, was about six people on this little dock trying, like, about crossing each other's lines, trying to put them right over the tube that we were putting the fish in. It was, I think, you know, they take, our commission does take certain comments every year, or whenever new laws and everything come out, they ask for our feedback. So in the future, I will put that out, because I'm sure I'm not the only officer that has to deal with that. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that gets a little frustrated with it. So hopefully, even if it was just like, you know, 15 minute window or some kind of something to prevent that from happening, would be all you need.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, that just kind of seemed a little disrespectful as far as, you know, the fishing community goes. And you know, it's kind of like, hey, granted, I get that we all paid the money and, you know, for the license and the trout stamp. And I know at the end of the day, obviously, when we harvest the trout, we paid for it as a trout. But at the same time, it's like, okay, you know, these guys don't have to have a trout program so we can catch trout. But because of how the fishing license, everything works up here, we're able to have that privilege and that right. Give them some space, let them do, like, you know, let y'all do y'all's job, you know, back off for a little bit, you know, just kind of seeing that, you know, that I was like, guys, come on. You got to have a little bit of respect for the guys that are actually giving us this opportunity here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I didn't know if there might have been any regulations or rules in place for that. You know, it just kind of rubbed me a little bit the wrong way seeing that, you know, but.
Sadly, not yet. And you're exactly right, because you were over there off the side with your kayak and you were catching fish. You know what I mean? Again, like we go back to fish swim, you know, you don't have to be right on top for you to catch those fish, but.
Yep, absolutely. Because I had landed two trout before y'all had even got there. And I'm not going to lay out the secret spot there in Harbor Acres to where some of those bigger trout hang out at. I kind of figured that one out, and, you know, somewhere some of the bigger ones that like to hang out in Harbor Acres, there's a secret spot there in that lake that they all like to kind of congregate. And I was probably, I don't know, 60, 80 yards from the boat ramp.
You got to keep that hush hush.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not giving away the good spot on that lake. That's why I pretend to target bass when I'm out there, but I know where the trout hang out.
Typical Billy.
don't rough on me too bad now, okay? Just doing the best I can with the gear that I got. So, Luke, obviously in Butler County, there's two different classifications of waterways out here for trout, and I know it's the same all the way across the state for the most part. So you have your normal trout stocking streams, or in Harbor Acres case, pond or lake, however they classify that body water. And then you have the, for those of y'all who don't know, a Class A stream, which is a delayed harvest area. Can you kind of go into the Class A stream program that has been set up for the trout?
Yeah, so a Class A water is a little bit different, and we actually, it's becoming, I guess, a better process where we're not supposed to be stocking Class A waters because there are some native trout in there, and then all you're doing is putting in more competition. There actually aren't any special regulation trout waters in Butler County, so no delayed harvest, no anything. So, for example, a delayed harvest section is the Neshanic over in Vallant, if you're familiar. It's a delayed harvest, artificial lure only, and you can't take fish until June is what it is. So it basically prevents people, helps keep those fish in there, helps people, you know, be able to go and fish and catch the fish for longer periods of time. Honestly, this year compared to last year, I haven't seen as many people keeping trout. It seems to be more popular now to release them, let them go rather than keeping them. I'm not kind of sure what you've seen while you've been out and about, but on my end, I've seen a lot of people releasing, which is good, but most of the streams that we stock and most of the trout, it's a put and take. So, you know, if people or anglers don't take them, animals will, or, you know, during summertime here, obviously, as you guys are familiar, it doesn't get as hot as Texas, but it still gets warm. And so trout being a cold water fish, it's hard for them to survive. So they might have a die off then.
Yep, absolutely. Obviously, the day that we met, you know, I did indeed take my limit of five, but most, I'd say 99% of the time, I do throw trout back. But with it being kind of the start of the year, you know, I was kind of craving that trout in the cast iron. So I was like, you know what, I'm catching some okay sized trout, so I'm definitely going to make a meal this evening. And I absolutely did, and it was good. But you know, most of the time it's just catch and release, because especially at Harbor Acres, only because I know that there's so many kids that go out there and fish. So, you know, if the parents want to keep the trout for the kids, I'd rather the kids have majority of the opportunity than me, myself going out there. All right, I'm going to get my limit today and I'm going to take it all. You know, I definitely prefer to go out there and catch and release and just have a great time and catch a whole boatload of fish, or in my case, a kayak load. But as far as Class A, you might know the location of it better. The Little Buffalo, I know it. Part of it does run into Allegheny, but the one section of Class A's, I'm talking just a couple minute drive just outside of the little small town of Fenelton. I don't know if that still falls under Butler County jurisdiction lines or not, or if that falls into Armstrong. No. Do you know if that's
it falls under
Armstrong?
Yeah, it falls into Armstrong there, because the Little Buffalo run right there flows in to the Buffalo, and it's like just a little bit past the confluence of where they come together is where you start that delayed harvest section. And yeah, that's the Armstrong County guys, and it's weird being that Armstrong and Butler are side by side counties, but Butler County is in the northwest, Armstrong County is in the southwest, so we don't typically get to work together very often.
Gotcha. In your job with the Fish and Boat Commission, do y'all use any type of drones or GPS tracking devices or anything like that to kind of aid in preventing illegal activities or to do any type of, you know, wildlife studies? As far as, obviously, Harbor Acres for a great example, you know, we got the eagles and the two ospreys that are out there. Do y'all use anything like that to kind of gauge off of what you're going to put in the water, how much you're going to put, you know, fish wise or anything like that? Or, you know, also, as I said, you know, to catch illegal activity with using drones as well. Is anything like that being used by the Fish and Boat Commission?
Kind of, yes. So we have basically we just use trail cameras. You know, we set them up, obviously, to catch most of the illegal activity if we can. But the biggest thing, as I'm sure you guys are familiar with, is OnX Hunt. Our agency grants us access to that, which is huge, you know, needing to find out what property owners, or when it comes to sections of creek, possibly trying to get a section of water opened up. We know who to talk to, where to go. And also, as like, I'm still a little bit of a novice in the OnX Hunt and being able to use different things, but I had a pollution case, and one of the things you have to do is kind of map out how far the pollutant has gotten. And so obviously, you know, you can do your distance lines, but you can really section it up to help follow the creek rather than just one straight line, like as the crow flies. And then you can just add them all up and boom, you're good to go. So I believe our stream restoration guys, I think they have access to a drone whenever they go out to assess a property and see kind of what needs done or where they're going to be able to put XYZ. I'm not 100% on that, but as far as law enforcement goes, sadly, we do not.
I know we talked a lot about, you know, your role in like the fish stocking and your role in the, you know, monitoring pollutants and things like that that get into the waterways. Is there any like really, I know you said you've been doing this for 2 years now, a year in training, a year in the field. Is there any experience or maybe even case that kind of highlights the importance of your job that you've experienced in your time?
Yeah. So, you know, I've had in Butler County, I've had a handful of pollution cases, which obviously are pretty memorable just from the sheer fact of, you know, it usually is pretty hard on the environment. So I had a case where a gas tank rotted through an old vehicle that was just sitting there. It was a diesel. And so the diesel fuel leaked out. It had a hard rainstorm, went down through the storm drain, into a tributary, into a stock trout water. Thankfully, the aquatic life that died was very, very minimal. DEP was able to get there and put up booms, which are things that go across the water to soak up the pollutant. Being that they had such a quick response with everything, it really helped. I'd say another one would probably be a BUI case that I pulled off of Lake Arthur. As everybody knows, like, you can't drink and operate a vehicle, period. But you can drink and operate a boat as long as you're under the legal limit, which, you know, I get it. It's a recreational activity. It comes along with the alcohol. I kind of wish it wasn't such because, you know, this individual that I took off the water was very, very intoxicated, and it was at dark. There was no lights on the vessel. And so it only takes a couple seconds. As you guys know, boats don't have brakes. So it only takes a couple seconds for something to turn very, very.
Yeah. Fortunately, I've experienced the issues of people not realizing that watercraft don't have brakes.
Exactly. And people think, oh, you just put it in reverse. Well, even if you put it in reverse, it's still going to take you some time to actually slow down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So how do y'all find out about like pollutants and things like that? Is there like a way that the public can notify y'all, or how do y'all really find out about those primarily?
A couple of different ways. If people are familiar with us, kind of like as Billy said at the beginning, they kind of lump all of us together with, you know, Fish and Boat, Game Commission, DEP, Parks. Your average person kind of thinks we're all the same, even though we're really not. And so, you know, maybe other agencies will get notified. They'll notify us. Or if somebody is familiar with us, that's another thing too, is like with Billy, I pass my state phone number out to a lot of people because I'm one guy. Like, I can't be everywhere. I can't see everything. And so, you know, if I can pass my number along to a good angler that's out there that can give me information and help me, then, you know, obviously, like, I'm going to be able to do that. So some people will be like, hey, you know, XYZ Creek is looking pretty muddy, or, you know, hey, I saw a handful of dead fish over here. You might want to check it out. Sometimes it's nothing. Sometimes it's the spawn of life of certain fish where they just have a die off. Other times it could be something like that diesel fuel where, you know, it turned into a serious situation.
Absolutely. And I've seen my fair share of that. And, you know, there's been several people in the body of water. They definitely, before I could even think they even call the hotline for a waterways conservation officer while fishing, they've already got someone on the phone. Hey, it's going down. You need to get here like right now. And then all of a sudden, you know, boom, there they are. And it's like, where'd you come from? Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a good thing, you know, that people have access to be able to get a hold of someone in your position and be like, to stop that from happening. So.
Well, and then we've here in Texas, we've met with a couple of game wardens, and they'll do the same thing where they hand out their phone number. And sometimes if we just have a question, they're a great resource where we could just call them or text them. And then we can be like, hey, is this legal? Is this right? Or, or sometimes we can even get like wildlife population updates and health updates, especially in CWD in certain counties here in Texas. It's starting to grow a little bit and the regulations are constantly changing. So it's nice to just have a quick access to someone with a lot of knowledge like that.
Yeah, that's huge.
So I'm going to ask you one more question here, obviously, because we've been kind of hitting hard on your role with the Fish and Boat Commission. But I'm going to ask you one more question here, and then we're kind of going to dive in afterwards about, you know, kind of what got you going into the hunting and fishing lifestyle prior to being a fish and boat commissioner. So this next question is more geared towards anyone really looking to become a waterways conservation officer. As far as from your experiences through training and in the field, for someone new who's looking to get into being a waterways conservation officer, what advice do you have to give out to those people as far as, you know, whether it be what materials to kind of start studying over now and things to do to kind of get in shape and prepare them for that next chapter in their book as far as becoming a waterways conservation officer?
Yeah, I mean, I just say go for it. You know what I mean? You look at a guy like me who was in a field that has absolutely nothing to do with the fishing boat and where I'm at now. And at the same time, you know, the training is long. It is not for everybody. My class started out with about 23 people, I believe. We ended up graduating with only 13. We've been in the field a year. I've had three of my classmates leave. So now we're down, my class started with 23, now we're down to 10. So it's not for everybody, but like with anything else in life, you don't know unless you try. You know, it is a process to get started and the training is long, but you're getting paid while you're there. You know, go give it a shot. See if you like it. You might like some aspects of the job. You might like other aspects. We do a section of game law, you know, and not that there's any problem with that. So, you know, somebody might like, be like, they have that section, be like, wow, I really like the game law way more. I'm gonna go over here to this agency. No harm, no foul. If that's what you love to do, then that's what you love to do. I always run into people all of the time. Like, it never fails. I would go as far as maybe once a week where I'll run into somebody and they're like, oh, I wish I would have had your job, or I wish I would have done what you do. It's sad because you can. You know, back in the day, this job used to be a lot more desirable, so it was harder to get into. But now there's so many vacancies, like with any other job, you know, shoot your shot, go for it.
Absolutely. And it seems like a very fun and interesting career, honestly, because you never know what you're going to get into at the start of the day. And that determines whether you turn left or right out of the driveway.
Yep. And it comes with so many different perks. You know what I mean? Like, you're out there stalking fish. I get to meet an awesome individual like yourself to be able to do something like this, which is super cool. Then on the flip side, you know, I've had people mother F me straight to my face, you know, 3 inches away over something that's so silly. So, you know, you get both sides of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I say, I know that feeling all too well, especially with Billy's parents on recruiting duty.
All right. So, Luke, who got you into the outdoors, man? Was it a family member? Was it friends of family? Like, how'd you get started and who got you started?
You know, I'd probably say my dad. You know, I just kind of grew up in the lifestyle. I have four older sisters, and my dad's rule was you had to take your hunter safety course and you had to go out at least once to try it. If you didn't like it after you actually gave it a try, then you didn't have to do it anymore. And so as soon as I could, you know, I was going out in the woods with my dad, and then it just kind of blossomed from there. I will tell you, you know, I do love fishing. I don't get to do it as much with this job because obviously our busy time is when fishing is coming in. I do love to hunt.
Yeah.
But my main passion is trapping. I love trapping. My dad got me started into that, and it's been, you know, like a drug ever since. You just keep chasing, keep going after more.
Mm-hmm.
So at what age did you actually, you know, actually really get into this? Yeah, were you super young? Were you a little further along? What time frame did that really kick off for you?
I'd say probably maybe like 8, 9 years old, not necessarily doing the hunting, but just going out in the woods with my dad. You know, I think it's, I can't remember, don't quote me, but maybe it's 12 years old before you're allowed to carry your own gun in the state of Pennsylvania. So I remember going out when I was younger than that. You know, my dad would have to carry the gun and then he'd get everything set up for me and ready to go before something would come through to shoot. I'd say probably around that 8-9 year old kind of range.
Mm-hmm.
What was your most memorable fishing experience and what was your most memorable hunting experience?
I'd say probably, again, out fishing with my dad. I was a little bit older. I might have been maybe 12 or 13 or so, around that time frame when I caught my first pike. We were out and it's called Otter Creek, and it's where my grandfather used to take my dad, and they used to do a bunch of fishing, and then, you know, he took me there, and we would always go, and we'd never really, I would never really have much luck on the predator fish. And I'll never forget where, you know, your dad's wrapping up and you're telling him, you know, he's telling you it's time to go. And I'm like, all right, one more cast. That last cast ended up hooking up on a fish. Couldn't tell what it was. You know, you're young. I set the hook so hard, pole's bending. I'm acting, you know, a little crazy because I'm excited. My dad's like thinking I probably got a stick or something. And he's like, no way. And sure as heck, I think it was about a 31 inch pike.
Nice.
Wow.
That I ended up reeling in. And so it was just super cool to be able to catch my first fish and be able to share that moment with my dad. And then also be that literal last cast, like, because there's always that, hold on one more. And then, you know, you finally get it done.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The last cast is always magical.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
That was a super cool moment.
Because it just keeps repeating itself.
you got that right. The hunting experience, I'd probably say, you know, the time I shot my first buck. Again, I was younger, around that middle school age. I shot this just little 4-point, you know, just a little old thing. But, you know, we're sitting there with my dad and, you know, you're young, you're kind of cold, you're tired, you're getting a little bored. And next thing you know, my dad's like saying, here's deer coming. And I'm like looking around, I'm like, where are these deer at that you're talking about? And sure as heck, the old man was right, you know, typically how they are. And out comes this little 4-point. And I was able to, you know, pull the trigger and get the job done. And, I remember we were out of state game lands, and obviously being young, you know, you can shoot anything. So I'm sure that deer was passed up by a lot of different hunters on the way to me. But I just remember dragging that deer out, so proud, smile on my face. Just, I didn't need any help because the adrenaline was pumping so much being able to get that deer. So that was probably one of my most favorite hunting memories as well.
I definitely hear you on that. Well, we are pretty much at the end of our podcast here. Obviously, it's been a great pleasure, Luke, having you here with us today. Once again, I want to thank you for coming on this morning. And again, another big thanks to your higher chain of command for allowing you to be here.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely been a great pleasure and an honor having you on here today.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, it's been a blast.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Like I said, I listen to a lot of podcasts while I'm driving around for work. And so as soon as I met you and you said that, I was like, let's do it. By all means, I know we got to touch on a good handful of things, a good basis. If later on down the road, you guys want to have another one, by all means, I'll be more than honored to come back on your show and give it some more insight.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I say, you heard that? You heard that, folks?
Part two. Now. All right. Well, that's going to conclude our podcast here at Get Out Media. Once again, with myself, Billy, James, and Spencer, and special guest, Pennsylvania Waterways Conservation Officer, Luke Walter. So once again, thanks.
Thank you guys for having me.
We will see y'all next time. So tune in to Get Out.
Thank y'all very much. Sir.